Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We are here today with Chris Gunty of Catholic Review Media, speaking about the upcoming visit of Pope Francis. Chris, thanks for being with us.
You bet. Thanks for having me here.
So Pope Francis is obviously coming to the United States. He'll be in Philadelphia at the end of September. Please give us a sense for how the Catholic Review is working together with the Archdiocese to make it possible for area Catholics to see the Pope.
Well, we have a lot of people really excited about this. We put together a bus pilgrimage, and we got some seats on the Amtrak train. We're just trying to make it as easy as possible for folks to get to see the Pope. The Mass in Philly is really the only publicly open liturgy event of the whole visit.
Right.
It's anywhere else is going to be really tightly ticketed. So we said, well, how do we get people there? So we got a full train car on Amtrak, and we bought another 20 tickets after those sold out. So we've got 92 people going up on the train. We've got another 700 people going on buses. We have seven parishes and schools that have a full bus all on their own, and we have a bunch of other buses that are taking people up there. And so what we're trying to do is to make sure that they can get as close as possible to the Pope. I think we have to realize, though, that just because you're going to be in Philadelphia doesn't mean
you're going to see the Pope.
No,
right?
You're not going to be holding his hand and shaking, you know, and saying hi to him. There's going to be probably a million people there. But you'll be part of a chance to experience the liturgy, experience the Eucharist with a million other Catholics. And that occasion just doesn't come along that often.
You and I have been fortunate because of our jobs that we've been in audiences that the Pope has had. We've been to Masses, and it really is a special experience.
It sure is. I was there for the beatification of John Paul II in 2011, and there were more than a million people on the streets on the Via della Conciliazione in Rome, and it's just an incredibly packed event. I've also been at a private Mass in Pope John Paul's chapel in the Vatican, and it's just so powerful to be in his presence, because this is the Vicar of Christ on earth. This is the one who the Holy Spirit chose to make sure that we stay on track.
That's right. So tell me a little bit about the logistics for the 27th of September, which is the day that the Pope will celebrate Mass in Philadelphia. On this end, in Baltimore, and in the Archdiocese of Baltimore, where will people be able to get on the bus?
We've got buses going from Frederick, from Davidsonville, and from Baltimore Towson. So we have a couple of different choices. The ticketing in general has closed already, but we have some seats left on buses that we're filling in. So folks can still go to our website at francisinphilly.org and get all the details and click right through to the registration. But they'll start early in the morning. We're actually still waiting to hear from the organizers in Philly of what time we're supposed to arrive in Philly, and that'll give us an idea of what time we depart Maryland. But we've been telling people it's going to be an early day, and they're going to get back late. The Mass ends at 6:15 in the afternoon, and it's going to take a while to get a million people out of the parkway. So at that point, you get to the point you say, well, okay, people are going to be back around 10:30 at night. It's going to be a long day. It's going to be a lot of walking.
And hopefully a memorable day. Do we know what people should expect in terms of the logistics, like once they get off the bus in Philadelphia? Will they be able to go where they want? Will they be restricted to a certain area?
What we're being told is that they'll be kind of funneled. You know, they'll be directed to go toward the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. The bus drop-off points are going to be, we've been told, 2 to 3 miles away. And so it's going to be that's probably, for most people, about an hour-long walk, maybe a little bit more, if it's 3 miles. And so they have to be ready for that. They also need to be ready for the fact that they're going to be standing in a lot of lines. There's probably going to be some kind of restriction of how to get into that parkway in Center City. The nice thing is that there's going to be almost no traffic during that day. they're restricting heavily the use of private cars. So people walking down streets, people on bicycles will really have kind of a free reign of almost all of Center City in Philadelphia.
Right. Tell me about what people are going to get when they get on the bus.
They will get a special rosary from us that we had commissioned for this. It's a special USA rosary that has red, white, and blue beads. And so we got 50 states. There's 50 beads. You pray for a state on each bead. There's a special prayer card in there. And that rosary has a medallion that has the archdiocesan crest on one side and says Francis in America. And then on the other side, it has the image of Mary as the Assumption from our own Baltimore Basilica. So there's that. Everybody will get one of those. They'll also get a nice, really nice hat that we've done. You can't see it on the radio, of course, but it's a bright yellow and white in the papal colors. And that's a wonderful little way to keep the sun off your face and go from there.
And also to recognize other Baltimore pilgrims who will be
It'll be easy to spot. Look for the yellow hats, and you should be able to spot your fellow pilgrims. We're also going to give them some bottled water for the walk, a bag to carry this all in, and we're going to have things like, you know, there's going to be a big jug of sunscreen on the bus, so everybody can douse themselves before they get off. You know, we're just trying to take care of everything.
You never know what the weather's
going to be. Yeah, we're trying to take care of everything.
You mentioned there's some tickets that are left over for the remaining seats. What's the cost for that?
$99, and that includes everything, including the bus driver tip. So a lot of times you go on a bus, bus tour, and you say, at the end they say, let's take up a collection, you know, for the bus driver. We've taken care of that too.
That's great. So it's really, really a simple process for folks. Just get on the bus, and then get back on the bus at the end of the day. So the Catholic Review is involved in another pilgrimage that day. Tell me, it's a unique opportunity, and I think it's a really great idea. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, we've got 20 people, including Father Jack Lombardi from Hancock and our own managing editor, Paul McMullen, who are leading this. And they're going to walk 104 miles from the Baltimore Basilica up to Philadelphia for the Festival of Families on Saturday and the Mass on Sunday. To go along with that, we're looking for people to help them out with meals and things along the way, which is one way that organizations can get involved. We're looking for schools and scout groups and things like that that might be able to help with that. But a neat way that everybody in the Archdiocese can get involved is we're doing a shoe drive. We're collecting new and gently used shoes that will be actually sent by one of our partner organizations to people in developing countries, Haiti, Pakistan, lots of places in Africa, and they give them there so they can start a micro business of cleaning and repairing shoes and selling them. And these folks are then able to go from earning maybe $2 a day to maybe $60 a day, which doesn't sound like a lot, but in those countries, that makes all the difference in a living wage. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking to have a lot of places all around the Archdiocese as collection points, so it's easy for people to drop them off. And the other nice thing is it's a little bit of a fundraiser. So we get some money based on the weight of the shoes, and we're going to give that to Archbishop Laurie to use for charitable purposes in the Archdiocese.
You mentioned there'll be a number of drop-off spots. Will those be posted online somewhere?
They will. We've got a website that we're building right now and working on all of that. So, and that'll be all over our social media as well.
That's great. That's a really great opportunity for people to get involved. And if someone wants to maybe participate for a couple miles in the leg of the pilgrimage, is that something that would be welcome?
I think it would be. We need to look at the logistics of how they get there and how they get picked up, but I think that's possible. Best thing to do on that would be to contact our office and talk to Paul McMullen and see if we can work that out.
Great. What do you anticipate from a journalist's viewpoint from the Pope's visit?
Well, I think that we're going to see the secular media covering this from a certain angle. You know, they're going to pick up on the juicy sound bites and bits of the Pope's remarks and speeches without really understanding how what Pope Francis says is connected to decades, centuries, millennia of church teaching. And so what we want to do, and I've covered these kinds of visits before, I've been to Rome a dozen times, I'll try to look for the images of people reacting to the scene. a woman in Germany at a mass with Pope Benedict, raising her hands in the air and closing her eyes in just almost in rapture. And that's not a really German thing to do. You know, a woman in Poland, in Krakow, outside of the old archbishop's residence, the week in mourning after John Paul's death, a couple of days before his funeral, just at 2 o'clock in the morning, heartbroken. Those are the things that, for me, help tell the story. This is, I think, where we see the face of Jesus and we know how the gospel message comes home. That's what we look for. What does this mean? How does this affect us as Catholics? It's great to hear what the Pope says, but what do we do with it once we hear that message?
And, of course, the entire visit will be covered wall to wall, as they say, in the Catholic Review. So tell us about coverage plans.
Absolutely. We've got a preview issue September 17th coming up that will kind of tell you what he's going to be doing, what the important issues are that he's going to be addressing. And we'll have coverage from the time he arrives in Cuba all the way through the time he leaves Philly. So that's about a week's worth of coverage. That'll be online every day. And then a huge wrap-up in our October 1st issue in print and even the October 15th issue. There's going to be a lot for us to talk about.
So if somebody wants to stay attuned to what's happening and they can follow the Catholic Review and through social media, what are those channels?
Absolutely.
And the web address?
Our website is catholicreview.org. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and whatever they've invented since this morning. So, you know, just search for Catholic Review Baltimore on any of those platforms and you'll find our stuff.
The Catholic Review is the official newspaper of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, and it covers all of the Catholic news here locally, but it also covers news from throughout the country and around the world. So if you don't currently get a subscription through your parish, we would encourage you to do so, and we would certainly encourage you to follow the Catholic News of the Day on the website and in the social media channels that Chris mentioned. Chris Gunty from the Catholic Review, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much.
You are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL.
Life can be hard, and at times we feel overwhelmed and alone. When faced with problems, know that there is a group of Catholics who are part of the prayer ministry of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, waiting to lift you and your needs to God in prayer. This ministry is comprised of men and women, young and old, religious and lay, from every ethnic and cultural background. They pray as individuals and in groups, in homes and meeting spaces throughout Baltimore. Like you, they are people who have suffered the same hurts, fears, pains, sickness, loss, and everyday burdens. Learn more about this ministry by visiting our website at www.archbalt.org. If you are in need of prayer, send your prayer request to prayers@archbalt.org or by phone to 410-547-5517. Would you like to volunteer to be a part of the ministry? Prayer ministers are always needed. Please call or email our coordinator, who would be happy to speak with you.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world from the Catholic Review. Exiting St. Matthew's Cathedral at the end of Pope Francis's midday prayer with the U.S. bishops, Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore told another bishop, "It doesn't get any better than this." He was referring to the Pope's uplifting messages during his historic visit to the United States September 22nd through 27th. Archbishop Laurie said he was pleased with the Pope's comments on religious liberty at the White House, where Pope Francis called the right to religious liberty a freedom that remains one of America's most precious possessions, and as my brothers, the United States bishops, have reminded us, all are called to be vigilant, precisely as good citizens, to preserve and defend that freedom from everything that would threaten or compromise it. Archbishop Laurie noted that the Pope highlighted at St. Matthew's the Church's care for the poor and vulnerable. "I think about those who are in greatest need in the city, the suburbs, and Mountain Maryland," the Archbishop said. Pope Francis even gave a shout out to the Premier See of Baltimore during his talk to the bishops, reminding them that he was not speaking with his voice alone, but also that of his predecessors. He said, "From the birth of this nation, when, following the American Revolution, the first diocese was erected in Baltimore, the Church of Rome has always been close to you. You have never lacked its constant assistance and encouragement." The Pope celebrated the mass of canonization for Saint Junipero Serra, a Spanish Franciscan who founded missions in California. The Pope urged the faithful to adopt Saint Junipero's motto,
keep moving forward. The Pope left Washington September 24th and was scheduled to visit New York City, including visits to the United Nations and Ground Zero. He concluded his trip September 27th with an outdoor mass in Philadelphia to close the World Meeting of Families. More than 1,000 pilgrims from the Archdiocese of Baltimore planned to participate in that mass. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is Christopher Gunty.
Do you want to know more about what's going on in the church and the world than you can get from your daily newspaper or local TV? Read the only newspaper in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the church full time, the Catholic Review. The print newspaper can be delivered to your home every other Thursday, and you can get fresh news every day online at CatholicReview.org. Subscribe to the Catholic Review e-newsletter for twice a week updates. Find our app on Apple and Android, and follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Wherever your faith takes you, Catholic Review Media is ready to inspire, teach, inform, and engage. Read it today, in print and online, at CatholicReview.org. Again, online, that's CatholicReview.org.
Catholic Baltimore takes a look at the men who have led the Premier See of Baltimore since its inception in 1789. With the help of Father Michael Roach, church historian and professor of church history at Mount St. Mary Seminary, we are offered a glimpse into the challenges and achievements, the education and background, and the leadership qualities of those men who have served as Archbishop of Baltimore. This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We're here today with Father Michael Roach, and we're just continuing our discussion on the Archbishops of Baltimore. And today we discuss the 13th Archbishop of Baltimore, William Donald Borders. Father Roach, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
So, obviously, Archbishop Borders, who only died just a few years ago, is one of the more recent archbishops compared to those we've been discussing. So, there are lots to remember about him. I personally had the ability to know him and to work with him, and he was a sweet man, a gentle
right,
man.
Right. Indeed he was. Indeed he was. And he had the grace to grow old in such a lovely way. And his last years out at Mercy Ridge, he became sort of the pastor there, and the people related to him as they would their parish priest.
And that must have been a blessing for him to, you know, one of the things you give up when you become a bishop is the ability to be just a priest, which, right. You know, it's why you get into the business. And so being able to go back to that, no administrative responsibilities, just the pastoral care, the love of the people, that must have been a great way to age.
And it really was, and I think that's why he lived to such a great old age, too.
He did.
Right.
So he's an Indiana boy, right?
Rural Indiana, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. But I guess when he was at St. Meinrad's, he was filled with zeal for the missions in Louisiana, and mm-hmm. and served down there as a priest of Baton Rouge, I believe,
mm-hmm.
right, and then of course was a chaplain in the army, and that was a very very formative experience for him. He spoke of that till his last years, and it formed great friendships there. Was very very well respected and revered by the forces.
Mm. Yeah, he would often tell stories about his service there, and I believe he earned the Silver Star.
I think you're right.
It, as you mentioned, it was formative for him in many, many ways. He was a simple man, wasn't he? He seemed to live a simple lifestyle. And
he appreciated and enjoyed living simply.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And eschewed even the Archbishop's residence, which I believe instead chose to prefer to live at the Sexton's Lodge, which literally would have been the house for the caretaker of the basilica.
Indeed, Charles. Yeah, right, Charles's house. I visited him there. It was a lovely house, actually, a very lovely house, but it certainly was small.
Right.
Right.
And today is the gift shop for the basilica, to give those listening an idea of perspective. And he even was said to like to have conducted business during lunch as opposed to dinner. And I think, again, that kind of speaks to his simplicity and kind
Surely.
Of old-fashioned nature. So what were the challenges of the day for William Donald Borders?
Oh, yeah, the challenges were many, as a matter of fact. And he met them. I think again, his motto tells the story, I will listen that I might serve, auscultabo ut serviam. And he was a good listener, and he was intent upon listening to all the voices, not just a few, not just the select, but all the voices.
He was a very much, you hear the word collegiality and you immediately think about him because he really did what he preached.
He did indeed, yeah, right. And established a number of bodies, collegial bodies to facilitate that.
And wrote a number of pastorals, a royal priesthood, yours is a royal priesthood, something like that. So was very, I think, focused on his teaching office.
Right. His coming to Baltimore was a surprise also. They were expecting the Archbishop of Atlanta, and instead they got the Bishop of Orlando, the first Bishop of Orlando, and I think he was surprised himself that he was named to Baltimore. This.
Why do you think he was chosen?
Breadth of experience, openness to the spirit of the day, a lot of different experience. He had been involved in Newman work on a college campus. He had been an army chaplain. He'd been a parish priest. So there was a breadth of experience there, which is always, in my book, a very good qualification for a bishop.
And we're still fresh out of Vatican II, so this requires a bishop who's, as you said, open to that experience and really applying the what came out of Vatican II in a way that people would embrace.
Yeah, yeah. Those were heady days, as a matter of fact. And he sailed the ship pretty well.
He is, you mentioned he was the bishop, the first bishop of Orlando, and during the time Neil Armstrong lands on the moon, so he, I think it speaks to his wit, mentions or jokes that he was the bishop of the moon.
Right.
Ergo.
Indeed. Yeah. He had a good sense of humor, there's no question about that.
And a great laugh.
Yes, again, yes, a great hearty laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I owe him a lot because he's the one who gave me permission to start teaching the seminary. I had to go see him. And I said, well, what do you think? He said, I think it's a great idea to get you out of the parish a couple of days a week, and that's good for you. He said, I did that when I was a young priest, taught a couple of days, did parish work the rest of the time. He said, it's a good accommodation, do it. And that's 38 years ago.
Mm-hmm. He seems to have had, at the very minimum, the affinity of the priests. He seemed to be a man who was well-liked, certainly in his retirement years.
Indeed. The retirement years were really the crowning of his life, which isn't often the case, but in his case, it really was. He was beloved, beloved.
If ever there was a grandfather, he was
right.
It, right?
Right.
Was he, do you look back at his experiences because he had been he had attended Notre Dame, was an associate at a parish in New Orleans, had been a chaplain at LSU, an army chaplain, the diocese, the head of a fledgling diocese, a new diocese at Orlando. Do the collection of all those experiences, do they help kind of mature him as a bishop and an administrator and as a priest even?
Right. They enabled him to have many different facets as the Archbishop of Baltimore. He was, as I mentioned, a great listener. He was great with the young people. He was keenly interested in education. His master's, I think, from Notre Dame was in education. So, and he was broad-minded. There's no question of that. And he was very inclusive.
Mm-hmm. Any formative decisions that he had to make? Were there any burning issues that you felt that were, you know, you look back on and say that they must have been particularly difficult for him? Was it there were still racial tensions? Was it the flight from the city and
right? And yet he was attuned to the needs of all the people. He only closed, I think, two parishes in all his years. So he really wanted to see people served and served well, and he did all he could to facilitate that.
So the final word on William Donald Borders?
He did a fine job in a very difficult time.
And a sweet man who, like wine, got better with age.
Yeah, I can still see his grin. He had a marvelous grin.
He did indeed. That's Father Michael Roach speaking about Archbishop William Donald Borders, the 13th Archbishop of Baltimore.
Archbishop William Laurie and the Archdiocese of Baltimore are hosting a panel discussion of Pope Francis's encyclical on the environment, Laudato Si, Our Common Home, on October 7th at 7 p.m. at St. Mary's Seminary, located at 5400 Roland Avenue. Leaders from the fields of theology, the environment, and world poverty will offer thoughts on the Pope's landmark encyclical before taking audience questions. Speakers include Dr. David Cloutier, Professor of Catholic Theology at Mount St. Mary's University, Lonnie Ellis, Associate Director of the Catholic Climate Covenant, and Dr. Carolyn Wu, President and CEO of Catholic Relief Services. There is no charge to attend this event, but seating is limited. To reserve your seat, send an email to communications@archbalt.org and include the number of people in your party.
The Catholic Church in Baltimore warmly welcomes His Holiness Pope Francis to the United States of America. In support of the Pope's historic visit, the Archdiocese of Baltimore is hosting a viewing of the Pope's September 27th Mass in Philadelphia. Join us as we watch the Papal Mass in the grass of the Cathedral of Mary Our Queen in North Baltimore, located at 5200 North Charles Street in Homeland. The cathedral lawn will be open to those wishing to watch the Mass on a large outdoor screen. The Ravens-Bengals game will be shown at 1 p.m., and the Papal Mass begins at 4. All are welcome to bring chairs, blankets, and a picnic dinner. Food trucks have also been invited. For more information, visit www.archbalt.org. Come join us as we watch the Papal Mass in the grass. For more information, visit www.archbalt.org.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.